everyone. Welcome to the Copy Blogger Podcast. I'm Tim. This is Ethan. I hope you're having a great week. I never know how to open the show. Like, I don't want to do an intro because I just want to get right to it. But then I don't want to be like nonchalant about it.
I think we should. The reason I laugh is because I'm pretty sure in the last 2 weeks you've switched to, "Hey everybody, I'm Sam, this is Ethan." like nobody can see. 99% of people cannot see that there's two people here in the first place.
But like, I do also, when there, because there are some podcasts, like I think Lex Friedman does it a lot, where he just hits record and like wherever they start talking, they start talking. And I actually don't like that. It makes me feel a little bit jarred, unsettled. But when that happens, I always end up hitting the plus 15 button a couple of times to see if there's like an actual logical starting point to the conversation. So,
interesting.
I'm sticking with it. I'm Tim.
This is Ethan.
This is Ethan.
And if you're one of our Sunday listeners, welcome to the show. We just found out that obviously the most popular day for downloads is the day that the show goes live every week, which is Wednesday-ish. But we were just looking at the data, and there's like I don't know how we didn't see this before, but a very clear Sunday bump. So like a big chunk of the audience listens on Sundays. So what up, Sunday gang?
Yeah.
Good to have you
here. Really interesting. We'll have to dig into that a little bit more. All right. I want to start this one off this week. I want to start off first by saying that I truly thought your interview with Danny Miranda was great. And I mean that in all sincerity. I was excited and impressed when I listened to it. I was doing yard work. Obviously, you know, we're moving to Denver. I just announced it in my newsletter today. So anybody else listening, if you're in Denver, let's meet up, let's get coffee. Be out there in a month or two. But I was doing yard work, prepping my house because we're going to rent this house out. And I was listening to it and I thought we did a great job. And I think one of the things that makes Danny special is he's just so blatantly and like unapologetically enthusiastic. You know, he's just like, he's so freaking excited. He's like a kid in the candy shop that just can't help himself. And I think that's really cool. But there was one thing in the podcast that totally stood out to me. And it's something that I wanted to bring up because I think there's a good chance people listening have interest in maybe starting their own podcast. It's a great way to network and meet people. I have a ton of success stories, including our relationship connected to when I had my solo podcast. It's one of the best things I've ever done. But I want to start this story off with Danny, because I was actually one of Danny Miranda's first guests. And sometimes I kick myself because I have a rule where I'll always say yes to a podcast because they were people that always said yes to me when I didn't have any listeners, right? And so it's just a personal rule that I made myself. And Danny reached out to me and he wanted to interview me. I said, yeah, sure. I didn't really think too much of it. And he asked me a question that I was so impressed by. And the question had to do with an article that I wrote like 3 years ago. It was about Will Smith. I know Will Smith has been in some the wrong side of the tabloids in the last couple of months, right? But I still personally regard him as somebody that I've looked up to as a professional and like as a motivator. And I wrote an article about something that Will Smith said that always stuck with me. And he said, "Everything you need to know in life, you can learn from running and reading. Reading, because there's nothing that can't be learned, it can't be said that somebody hasn't already put in a book somewhere. And running, because it's one of the only things in your life where you're on your own. There's nobody cheering you on and you suffer so much. And it's just up to you to quit, because you can quit anytime. You're a runner. You know this. There's just days where you're like, this is miserable. I do not want to be here." And, I wrote an article about it. It's still something that I think of pretty regularly, frankly. And Danny asked me about it. And at the time, this was probably 2 years ago. And I had written the article 3 years prior. So this article was probably 5 years old. And I was so impressed with that. And it was such a great conversation starter. And it made me feel appreciated, but like special in a way. You know, like there's this idea that I haven't really shared with a lot of people, and this kid is bringing it up to me and making me feel like heard and making me feel listened to. And in the episode that you interviewed with Danny, he brought this strategy up right to the forefront. And it's some of the best things I do because I get to know my guest better than they know themselves in that given moment. And Danny made a tweet about this probably a month ago. And I remember reading it being like, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, you don't know anybody more than they know themselves. It doesn't make sense. But then when you broke it down, he's right. Because me as a person, I'm always thinking about what's in my world, what's in my sphere of influence right now. And I didn't even remember about those ideas that I had and the way that I was feeling 5 or 6 years ago. And so in a way, he knows something about me that I've kind of forgotten about myself. And when he brought that question to me, it brought all those feelings back up and it raised all this excitement and it made for a really, really great conversation. So two final points before I open it up. One, if you want to start a podcast, it's just a great tactic. You know, dig into somebody's archive. If they've been writing for a while, if they have a Twitter account, like go find something deep, learn something about them that they have forgotten about themselves. And then two, like from your perspective, from interviewing him, you know, how effective do you think that has been for him growing the show? So I'm going to start it there. I want to hear your insight on it.
Well, first of all, thanks, man. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it.
It was great.
I agree. He's an impressive dude. He's definitely going places. And that was also one of my favorite parts of the conversation, where he talked about how his goal for any given interview is to teach the interviewee something about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paraphrasing there, but that's roughly what he said. And I thought that was such a bold notion to say, well, I'm going to come into this and I'm not just going to understand this person. They're going to walk out of here understanding themselves better because of our conversation. So I thought that was really cool. He's definitely an interesting thinker. And I think a lot of the passion that you notice from him comes from his willingness to say those things out loud. When you say how effective do you think it's been for him to grow the show, do you mean that strategy, or do you mean just his conversation with me? Like, do you think maybe our interview blew his show up, which is definitely not the case?
I don't think that's the case. I suppose even when I asked that question, I did feel a little bit like too narrow in what I was trying to get at. The second part, really, is you had mentioned, I think this is connected to his enthusiasm, really. You had mentioned he kind of has this trait that there's almost not a word for in the English language. It's kind of like, I don't even know better that I can't do it, so I'll just give it a shot anyway, right? Like, I don't know if we have a word for that. You called it daringness.
Yeah, it youth.
Yeah, right? Being a dumb young kid that doesn't know any better.
Yeah, exactly. So what's really interesting about Danny, when you get into his archive of stuff, is he's been doing this for a long time. He hinted at something in the show, which people who've heard the episode may have keyed in on. But he said two things. He said, everything that somebody says is a podcast. Yeah. And what he meant by that is you could take any given experience that somebody had and just go so deep on it that there really is no reason to feel like you are at a loss for interesting, new, novel conversations to have with people, because most people don't get that much attention for most of what they say and do. So you can take any one of those and make it really interesting. And I think one of the cool takeaways for people out there related to that is, like, there is no such thing as a saturated podcast market. You know, the takeaway there is, if you get good at that skill of taking people who maybe have been talked to dozens and dozens of times in public, you get good at helping them say something new, there'll always be a place for you. You can do that as a podcast. You can do it as a newsletter. The market will never be saturated because there's always demand for new and better. The other thing he said was, he mentioned offhand that, you know, we could do an entire show just on how he got Gary Vaynerchuk to call his mom when he was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say anything else about it, but I went back and I actually saw that story. And if you dig into his archive, what you see is that he's been out there doing all this stuff for a long time. I mean, he's 26 now. So that's more than a decade ago. He was already, you know, reaching out to Gary Vee online and trying to interact with these people. So there is this thing about him where I think that's unique and not everybody has that. And he's not that much younger than me. So I don't want to say youth over and over again, but there's something about him where you see him and you're like, man, this kid is enthusiastic about what he's doing. And I want to help. I want to help kind of bring him into the fold. Right. And so I think when it comes to getting these big guests on, there's a lot of people out there who know how much work it takes to kind of make it in podcasting or newsletters or anything like that. They see somebody out there who's putting the work in and who's really enthusiastic about it. And they open all kinds of doors for that person. Danny's a good example of that. And I think there's a lesson there for people too. I don't think it actually has anything to do with age. I think it's more like enthusiasm.
Yeah. One of the other things, one of the other reasons I wanted to bring this up, pulling it away from Danny specifically, is because I don't think people realize how wide open the podcasting sphere still is. I've always been curious by this because in all respects, it's one of the easiest ones to start. You don't need anything. Everybody already has like a pretty decent microphone with their AirPods. You wouldn't believe how many podcasts you listen to that people are talking into their AirPods. It's not, you know, like studio level, but you can absolutely hear and understand what people are saying. Second off, the platforms, there's a couple of platforms that are free. That is like one or two buttons to push. And now you have a podcast. Getting hooked up to iTunes, all it takes, and I really mean this, is a high-res logo, which is 1400 by 1400 pixels on an AI file. That's all it takes. And podcasts, here's what I think is so interesting about podcasts, is everybody quits. Everybody quits podcasts. And I don't know why. Like, why are we so willing to tweet into the void and to post Instagram pictures for years and years and years, sometimes without ever building a following? Most of the time, people aren't even trying to build a following. They're just posting for years without knowing why, right? So why is it that podcasts, that when you have a podcast and you have an audience, it's a really deep relationship because you hear people's voices, right? So your listeners kind of feel like they know you, and you can build a whole lot of influence with the podcast. And so with that benefit, how come so few people start podcasts, and how come like hardly anybody continues forward with a podcast for years until they hit the peak point where they have a lot of options? Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think part of it has to do with what actually allows a podcast to hit that inflection point. Sam had an interesting conversation about this with Jonathan Barshop and Ben Wilson Yeah, you heard it. My First Million podcast. So for people who don't know it or those names, Ben Wilson's the producer. Jonathan Barshop manages growth for the show. And they're, you know, one of the top podcasts out there right now. And they were having a really interesting conversation. And by the way, both those guys come from long backgrounds in the podcasting space. So Jonathan used to manage an agency specifically for booking podcast guests.
No way.
And Ben, yeah. Funny enough, I actually reached out for them as a potential client like years before Jonathan and I started working together. So we found that one out in retrospect. And then Ben has his own show. It's called How to Take Over the World. It's very popular as well. So three interesting people who all know a fair amount about podcasting. And inside that conversation, they were talking about this framework for like what actually differentiates a podcast. And it was really interesting. I think it was Ben who brought it up. And this comes from another guy. I'll get his name in a second, but he's one of the OGs in the podcast space. He's produced some of the most successful, longest standing podcasts around. And he essentially says that there's like four things that can differentiate a podcast: who the hosts are, like what their unique background is, who the show is for, right? What's the audience? What do they talk about? What's the topic? And how do they talk about it? So like, what's the angle? And he says, this was the interesting part, where most people go wrong, and this might be leading people to quit, is they have one of those four, and what you really need is two. And so the example that Ben gave is he says, well, you know, you might see people who say, like, I'm going to do a podcast on gorillas because nobody is doing that. And okay, fine. Nobody's doing it. You've got your one differentiator right there, topic. But you need one of the other three in order to have a show that people are really going to care about long term. And so, you know, his example was, he says, are you Jane Goodall? Right? Do you have a lot of experience in this space? Some kind of unique background that would allow you to comment on it? If it's not that, it's going to have to be either the angle, right? Or the particular, like the way that you are, like, you're going to have to get somebody else on the show that maybe does or something like that. You have to have two of those four nodes in order to have something that eventually takes off. And I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like we've been doing this for almost a year and it's definitely growing. We've talked about some of the data in the past. For people who don't know, currently somewhere around 25 to 30,000 downloads a month. So thank you to all of you guys for that. But I feel like even after a year, we're still just kind of zeroing in on really what that should be. And so I wonder if that's the other part of why people walk away so much, is because it really does just, it takes time to even figure out what those two things should be. And if you're not really experiencing any traction, it's very hard to power through that, I think.
I think obviously that is a great point, considering that somebody who has a ton of experience in the space said it. After doing this for a while, I think there are two other factors as well. One is that podcasting is super vulnerable, and you don't realize it until you start recording yourself and putting yourself out there, but it's different than posting selfies. You know, like when we get done recording, there's some times where I'm like, oh my God, that felt so good. Like, we were really vibing. And then there's other times where I walk around and it's kind of like, oh, like, that's painful. And like, you got to publish it because that's part of who we are. And that's part of like our foundational ethos, right? But it's much more vulnerable than you would think. It's the kind of thing where you really think about a lot. Like, how do I do better? How am I a better presenter? How do I tell better stories? Like, what about my voice? How do I control my voice better? And so I think that has a lot to do with it. We're halfway through. People get that point where it's like, you've crawling out of your skin and you kind of want to burst a little. And so you're just like, I'm not doing this anymore. It's not worth it. It's not worth staying up at night looking at the ceiling thinking like, why do I feel so silly when I record my podcast? I really think that's got something to do with it.
I totally agree. And I, like, just candidly for people listening to this, I probably would have walked away from this months ago if it was just me recording every single week ideas. Mm. So there's one or two other things that I think have helped with this project. And like, I've been that guy. I've done plenty of other creative projects that have not lasted this long. So some of the things that I think differentiate this one is, like you said, we push each other to put stuff out. So like, there have been times when you'll text me and be like, I don't know about that one. Or I'll text you like, I don't know about this one. And the rule is like pretty much always, no, it goes out, right? Like, we have to publish. So you have somebody on the other side of the table to like push you when that gets hard. But also, it's just like genuinely fun. So this isn't, I don't think of this as a chore every single week. We record on Fridays pretty much after work, although I told you before we got on here, I'll be working late today because I'm not getting anything done so far. But it's like genuinely a fun way to kind of wind down. And I would do this no matter what, even if there was no podcast attached to it. It's maybe it's easier to get together regularly because there is some kind of like quote unquote productive outcome. But it's so easy. It's been so easy for the most part because it's fun. And it's like, it's just fun to have these conversations. And it's a thrill to hear that other people like them. Like, when we get those comments and stuff, that is so cool. But it's like, not why I do this. And then the third thing I think is that we actually keep it pretty easy. So we were just talking about this before we hit record. You know, there's not a lot that goes into this podcast operation. Like, we basically, and this was by design from beginning, right? When you came to me last year, you said, like, I hate scheduling all the guests and, you know, dealing with the logistics of all this stuff. I just want to do a thing where we get together on like Fridays and talk through some cool stuff that we're learning. Like, are you into that? So that's basically what we do. We both go off. We live our own lives throughout the week, keep track of interesting stuff, come here, and then talk about it. And I never know what's going to happen. It's just always interesting. So to sort of tie that up for people and make it accessible, it's like, if this is something you're considering, and you maybe are like me and have kind of a history of walking away from projects, try to keep it simple. Try to keep it fun. Like, what would actually be enjoyable, even if it never gets any traction, right? Like I said, we're almost a year into this, you know? And until recently, I never even looked at the statistics. I probably won't look at the statistics that much after this. So those are the things that come to mind. But for Danny in particular, what I think has grown his show is, well, actually, I don't know what's grown his show. What grows on people who listen to his show is his ability to get those insights, those stories out of people that everybody knows and likes that they've never heard before. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're like, oh man, I never knew Sam, like he said, rode his motorcycle across the US. I want to hear that story, that kind of thing. I think it's really unique.
Yeah. Great insight. I'm really grateful that we were actually able to share some of that, because it's been one of the funnest things I've done. And I think really to wrap this point up, you keyed on it a little bit, where you got to find a way to take the pressure off, because there's something about podcasting that just feels very pressure. It really does. It feels, if you have guests, it's a lot of pressure to get them talking. It's a lot of pressure to do the research. It's a lot of pressure to maybe not do the research. Like, you know what? I just want to go into it. Let's just have a conversation and see how that goes. And you second guess yourself a lot. So take the pressure off.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, just to be fair, so I don't end up giving people bad advice, like there's a fair amount of that we do as well. I don't want to pretend like this is so easy that you just show up. I mean, there are weeks where we just show up and figure it out.
Yeah.
But research is part of my job, so we kind of have that advantage. You're running a company, so like there are several companies. So kind of like by default, you have interesting things happen to you throughout the course of the week. So I think there are some things that have ease the burden on prepping for shows, just because it's like part of our day to day. But, you know, related to the intimacy thing, so I mentioned that 4-part framework that comes from a book by a guy named Eric Newsom, and that's Nuzum. It took me forever to find this guy. His book is called Make Noise, A Creator's Guide to Podcasting and Great Audio. And I'm listening to it so far. It's interesting. It's interesting to hear somebody who's got as much experience in the field as he does. But one of his theories is that the reason that podcasting took off, I don't want to say over radio, but he's like, I think it would be fair to say that he sort of asserts podcasting is even more intimate than radio, even though they are both effectively the same thing. He says that some aspect of that is because of the invention of earbuds. You're like that much like closer to somebody. And it is like kind of a more intimate experience in terms of just deciding to spend time listening to somebody.
Yes.
Literally in your ear. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of an interesting theory. And what he says is he says that was an industry thing, that maybe podcasts really got their chance because ear pods or AirPods or whatever you call them started becoming more and more ubiquitous. And then there's like some unseen factor at play there where people are, you know, choosing this media more and more than they may have if everyone was still listening. Like if you had to publish your podcasts over the radio, it'd be different. It would be different. It feels, and do you listen to the radio still?
No, never. But so, man, I'm dying to get to my adventure for the week, but this is really fascinating to talk about because it's a huge cultural shift. And let me tell you why. I don't bring my cell phone into the gym. I go to the gym every morning at 8 o'clock exactly. My wife and I are there from 8 to 10. And I purposely don't bring my phone in for two reasons. One, because I try hard to stay away from my phone. And two, because I actually get way better workouts because then I can't stop in between sets and fucking do whatever, you know? And it is mind blowing sometimes to think about. I don't have bad knees at all, but I have a thing called Osgood Slaughter. Basically, like I grew too fast. And so the tendons in my bones didn't grow as fast as like my bones. because I got tall so fast when I was a kid. So anyway, I always have to warm my knees
up. By the way, I've met Tim in person and he is tall.
Yeah, I'm pretty tall. So I always have to warm my knees up, and there's great rehab exercises I do where I walk backwards on the treadmill, or if you pull a sled, if you got bad knees, seriously, like do this. And I am looking and every single person in the gym has headphones on. And I'm thinking to myself, this wasn't a thing 10 years ago. And nobody except for me goes to the gym without headphones on. And I'm just thinking to myself, like the brain control that podcasters have, where you are quite literally the conversation that people are having inside their heads with the most intimate moment that they have with themselves, which is at the gym. And 10 years ago, this didn't happen. And it's really relevant because since my wife and I work out together, she'll bring her phone in case the daycare has to text us or something like that, but she keeps it in her purse, and then it'll play music at the Y. And there's never any music. And I think to myself, of course there's no music. Why would they play music? Because it's going to be like background noise over top of people's podcasts and music that they have in their headphones.
Huh.
And you mentioning that was really funny timing, because this was just last week. I know I had like a really random esoteric story about my knee rehab and my time at the gym, right? But it dawned on me, there is not one person in here except for me that doesn't have somebody talking directly into their brain to them first thing in the morning. And I think that right there really is like the difference of podcasts and radio, because you would never do that with radio. Isn't that wild?
Fascinating time, man. Yeah. All right. You mentioned you have an adventure.
Cool. I hunted down the head of marketing for ConvertKit and I hunted him down, because I needed to get my newsletter on their ad network. And luckily I was able to do it, and I'm really, really excited. But this is something that I think is so cool, because we all know that newsletters are becoming a huge ad platform. But what newsletters struggle with is creating an advertising network effect, because there's no social media behind them. Like, it's part of what makes newsletters so personal. Is that as a one-on-one relationship with you and your listener and your reader, and you don't have to go through a Facebook or a Twitter or an ad platform to do that. That's a great thing, but it makes it more and more challenging for advertisers to reach audiences through newsletters, because you basically have to do sales one-on-one. You have to meet with every media platform individually. And I was always fascinated by this. There's a company called Letterhead, tryletterhead.com. And they sort of, you know what? I'll share my screen with this. Pop it open, because this is really cool. And it's such a simple, awesome solution to what I felt was like the barrier for the newsletter space. So tryletterhead.com. If you're listening and not watching the video, I pulled up the Letterhead website. It's cool. They're trying to create a network effect for advertisers. So you can basically put a store on your website and advertisers can buy an ad slot directly through this software. And then they buy an ad slot and the software submits the ad with the image and the text, and then gives you an embed code. And then the advertiser could basically just put the embed code in their newsletter. Pretty simple. It's difficult, because since there's no foundational platform, you don't really know who it is that you're advertising to through the newsletter, because the advertiser doesn't have the same data that a Facebook could provide to you. And so I thought this company was going to do well. It hasn't. I shouldn't say it hasn't. It hasn't. I don't think they're profitable, let's say. And they're cool. I mean, they're really cool. I've followed them for a while. They have their own. It's a cool case of let me solve my own problem and turn it into a product, because they have a bunch of local newsletters, which you know that I'm a huge fan of. And they were trying to solve the problem of like, how do I have companies in all these different cities that I got to talk to sell ads in my newsletter? So they solved it with this. I think really what's happening is this platform is helping them monetize their own newsletters really well, which is turning it into a profitable business. But I don't think the platform itself is doing really well. And nice.
So you're saying they've got a bunch of newsletters. Yeah. They basically built software to manage their ad sale process, and then they kind of split that out and turned it into a SaaS on its own.
Correct. This is their media company, whereby.us. So this is their biggest one, the Nootropic. It's a newsletter in Miami. Pulp Town, this is Portland, Oregon. The Incline, this is Pittsburgh. The Evergrey, I forget. I think this is Pacific Northwest somewhere. And the Bridgeliner, I have no idea. So these are their newsletters, and they built Letterhead as a way to automate their ad sales for themselves.
Hmm.
And I think it worked. And so as I'm signing on for this ConvertKit thing, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, man, I really hope this doesn't turn into a dud, because how the hell is ConvertKit going to get all the inventory? And I don't know Nathan very well. Like, he and I chat on Twitter. I might call him a friend. I don't know. He's an acquaintance, right? But I do know that he's like a methodical, patient operator. He doesn't do things like me. He really takes his time, and he does them right, and he builds the right team. Like, I know that about him. And so I'm thinking, how the hell is Nathan doing this? How is he making it so that as people want to submit their newsletter to the ad network, how does he have the inventory on top of it? And it is such a freaking simple.
Can I pause?
Goddamn
you?
Brilliant.
When you solution. Say inventory, do you mean demand, right? So like advertisers?
Advertisers, or? Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. How does he have enough advertisers to fill all the ad slots that the newsletter creators are going to want to put on their newsletters?
Awesome.
And when I saw how simple this was, I wasn't even sure if I should bring it on the show, because it's so obviously simple that there's no like huge groundbreaking moment. But check it out. In order to get into his network, you have to put a sponsor page on your website, and you have to basically create the network effect for ConvertKit. So I'm on James Clear's website right now. James Clear has 2 million subscribers on his newsletter, jamesclear.com/sponsor. And if you sponsor the 321 newsletter, it's a short blurb, which ConvertKit provides for you. They simply suggest that you put some stats on your newsletter so the advertiser knows what they're looking for, give you some guidelines. I didn't put this on here. My guidelines are basically, if I don't want to do it, then I won't. I can decline the ad. I think James Clear is a little bit bigger of an audience than me. No, he wanted to put that in. And then what happens? And then at the bottom, there's a get started paragraph. And it said, if you're interested in working together, please fill out this form. So you would think that this form goes to like a contact form that gets submitted to James Clear, right? But it doesn't. All of it goes. Yeah. All of it goes to the centralized ConvertKit sales team, which then collects the potential advertisers and brokers them out to all of the creators who want to sell ads. So this is
that's interesting.
Page.
And for people listening, it looks like ConvertKit is doing that on a type form, right? So
yeah,
that's pretty awesome too.
Pretty awesome.
Some people might think in order to build out this big ad network, they had created, you know, an extensive software product that brought in all the, you know, potential advertisers into some kind of CRM. Oh, it's a type form. So, that's cool. It's like, it just shows you can just get started. Just do this. Have you clicked through that form at all to see like what kind of information they're collecting from people?
No, let's see. Actually, you know, I won't do it on James Clear's. I'll do it on mine. So
do
I'm
it
on Tim Stott's.
James Clear's.
Well,
yeah, no, I'm kidding.
He won't come on the podcast. So I'm secretly like annoyed.
Use it to pitch him.
Yeah. Well, I've tried a few times and he always says, James would love to come on your show, but he's really busy like traveling the world and doing photography and cashing in on his book sales. So sorry, he can't be bothered. So I'm on timstods.com/sponsor-me. What's your company name? Ethan's awesome company. I don't know how many fields this is going to be. Ethan.com. Ethan.
So far it's like, yeah, name or company name, email address, website. Okay, here. Monthly. Here we go. This is what I was hoping to see. Monthly budget for sponsorships. And the options that they have here are from basically more than $1 million to less than 10K. And it looks like they kind of go up by like 50. Yeah, they go up by large increments. So less than $10,000, 10 to 50K, 50 to 100, 100 to 250, 250 to a million, more than a million. This, I would love to know what the clicks on this look like. Why don't you click, there's nobody who's spending more than $1 million through.
That is not this. True.
No. There's definitely people who are spending more than $1 million, but this form is not getting that click. I don't
think. All right. We're going to click A.
What I was going to say, for people who are hearing me kind of think out loud here, a lot of times when companies set up these early forms, they'll put form logic in there too, based on what they're looking to work with. So it's possible that the ConvertKit team doesn't want to work with people who have more than $1 million to spend because they don't fit some kind of like ideal profile for this program. For example, like at The Hustle, we worked with companies that have enormous ad budgets. And very often there's a lot of back and forth that happens in that might not be appropriate for a program like this. Goldman Sachs, as an example, is just a company that has many, many layers of approvals for ads, stuff like that. So my thought was be strategic about which one of these we click, because one, like maybe two or three of them route you further into the system and the rest are probably like a very kind, thanks, we'll get in touch. But yeah. So we clicked more than a million because we're ballers. Let's see, what type of creators do you want to sponsor? Business, investing, productivity, fitness, fashion, food.
Also, shout out to Kay Hee. That's Kay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's
he's handsome. Look at that dude.
Look at that shirt, too. I feel like there's a thing. There's like an income threshold where all of a sudden, like an income/fitness threshold where all of a sudden you get real cool shirts. Yeah. Like all my favorite comedians hit this point, and apparently Kay hit it too. I'm not quite at the cool shirt fitness/income threshold yet, but one day. All right. Why is your brand a good fit to work with and sponsor creators on the network? Wow. That's an interesting question. So far, what we have not seen is describe your product, you know, no uploading of assets. So, this is not completely automated. Oh, this what is that?
And look, this is the last one. This is submit. I'm not going to submit this because I'm not going to do a fake form, but you're totally right. They are vetting companies before they vet products, probably to make sure that it's a good like cultural match, which totally makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. And probably a big one on that budget component too. So there's definitely a live sales team behind this that's going to do the actual outreach afterwards. This is really just helping decide who they reach out and contact. Cool, man. This is really cool. I think what they're doing is awesome. Correct me if I'm wrong. Sparkloop started something like this too recently, right? Sparkloop's got an ad network.
Yeah, sort of. So I believe what Sparkloop does, I'm an investor, full disclosure, is they have, because Sparkloop has the magic link functionality where if you're in the ConvertKit network, you can actually create a link that automatically subscribes you. So you can just say like, click this link to subscribe, and then you don't have to fill out the form. The magic link will subscribe you as long as the person sending the email and the person receiving the email are both on ConvertKit. And so theirs is a little bit different where it's more about subscribers. You're not creating an ad as much as it's like newsletters sharing each other. Kind of like a cooler version of Substack's recommendation form thing where, you know, like your newsletter recommends other newsletters. That's kind of what Sparkloop is going for. But, you know, clearly this is going to have a lot more dollars flowing through it because of this network effect that they're building outside of the platform, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, the network effect is definitely interesting. One other thing that I think makes ConvertKit's program different from the Letterhead one is that you would assume a lot of the ConvertKit partners are running their newsletters on ConvertKit, right? So ConvertKit's got the data behind the scenes to show how good the newsletter performs in terms of audience, open rates, clicks, all that kind of stuff. So when they're pitching advertisers, they're going to be able to give a much clearer picture of what the advertiser can expect. It means they're going to be able to monetize at a lot higher rate. I would also suspect, and I'm just guessing here, we should see if Nathan wants to come on and talk about this, but I would suspect because they are filtering by like type of influencer, then what they can do is they could actually say to somebody, look, we're not going to just place you in one newsletter. What we're going to do is we're going to say, you tell me how many eyes you want. And I'm going to, and if I have enough high quality newsletters to fill it, I'm going to take your ad and split it across all these newsletters. So if say somebody wants to reach whatever, 2 million people. And like you said, you know, James Clear's got like 1.8. So they need to make up another 200,000. Yeah. Well, now they can go to whatever the copy blogger one would be part of that. And then maybe some smaller one is part of that as well. And then not only are they going to be able to give you the audience that you want, which is like so rare to find, like, I don't know that there's anybody else that can really do that in the newsletter space right now, but each of those audiences are going to have very different engagement profiles, right? Like some guy who's writing a personal finance newsletter for 10,000 super loyal readers is just going to have different engagement on an ad than somebody who's got maybe 2 million readers would have, regardless of how loyal their followings are. You have a different relationship with your audience at that point. So super interesting, man. This was fascinating.
Yeah. So what's simple.
What are some of the takeaways here for people who are tuning in? One would be like, check out the ad network if you've got a newsletter. I think they're still being pretty, what was your experience like getting on? They're still vetting the newsletters that they allow into the ad network pretty.
It was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me a while to get on. And like, I'm going to sound pretentious saying this, but one of my positive traits is my tenacity. And I would not have been on by now if I don't think I was so annoying. And yeah, really, like they are being very, very methodical with this. So I think that within itself is a takeaway, because I think they see very, very clearly that there is such an opportunity to ride this newsletter influencer space. And if they get it wrong, they could really, really screw it up. But if they get it right, they'll own the whole thing. Because I guess like a final point here, which is why this is so touchy, is you mentioned before that since so many people are going to be using ConvertKit, that the backend admin team is going to have a lot of the data to share with the potential advertisers. And that, I believe, is one of the reasons why it was so difficult to use Letterhead, because it would give you the embed code, but the embed code wanted to be on MailChimp. And MailChimp, as amazing as a company as it is, it's not the culture of the company isn't for entrepreneurial newsletter creators. The culture of the company is very much for like corporations or C corps and people that are a little bit more in scale that want to send out like company memos, let's call it. It's kind of hard to explain. If you spend a lot of time on MailChimp and you spend a lot of time on ConvertKit, you'll see the different people that gravitate towards that. And so since Letterhead wanted to use MailChimp, it was hard to put that into my newsletter, which again goes into this point that there's no centralized hub. There's no centralized ad network like a Facebook or a Twitter that makes it like a one size fits all and makes you play by the same rules that everybody can play by. And so ConvertKit is manually creating these rules. And since they're the only ones that know the rules, because they're the ones that like wrote them and they make it easy for everybody else, I really, really, truly think that over the next 5 years, I think this is going to like triple, maybe even more, the size of their company. Because I mean, I suppose the leverage that they have is quote unquote infinite, but not really, because MailChimp has like what, like a million members or something crazy like that, right? Something out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe the latest stat that I saw is something like 14,000 people sign up for MailChimp a day? Let me double check that.
Yeah, I think maybe it's more like 50 million.
Yeah, they've got a lot of users.
Yeah, they have a ton.
Okay, so you're pointing to a couple. Yeah, 14,000 new email marketers join MailChimp every weekday. It's big. That's a lot. I think you're going to see a lot of companies go this direction. It's very innovative for ConvertKit to do this. And if you think about why it's working, aside from execution, which they're doing a great job on.
Yeah.
And the need, which you pointed to. There's a few other things that I think are going to help this to continue to snowball. ConvertKit, as you mentioned, they have all that data behind the scenes. So it makes it easy for them to connect, to sell, but also just a whole bunch of experience in terms of what converts from an ad perspective or landing page perspective.
Yeah.
So they're going to be able to help design. I don't know to what degree they're designing the ads that are going into newsletters, but you got to say to yourself, if they are helping there and applying what they know to creating high converting ads, which they know, their thing for a long time has been conversion rate optimization, right? Yeah. A lot of experience they bring to the table there. And the more sort of layers that they can add to this execution of, hey, we have the data. Hey, we have the infrastructure. Hey, we have the expertise to show you what's going to work and what's not going to work. It's just going to result in higher performing ads for people who are buying through this network and that snowball effect. And as soon as companies start seeing that work, I think you're going to see the MailChimps and the potentially HubSpots. Who else does this? Twitter's got their newsletter network. I think everybody who's got a newsletter platform may end up implementing some kind of ad network like this, especially if people if Facebook continues to show signs of weakness, right?
Crazy. 20% down. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Fascinating. Real quick, let me mention one other thing. So we had talked just briefly about Sparkloop, and I just found this tweet. For people who may not be able to get into the ConvertKit program yet, you were right. Sparkloop's program is not an ad network per se. It's a newsletter referral program. But Louis shared this thing on Twitter recently. It's a screenshot. And he says, this is the payout for the first month of the partner program. He's got a partner in there, 15,000 subscribers, did $3,600 in earnings. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know a ton about their program, but 15,000 subscribers is a relatively small, it's a very small newsletter, relatively speaking.
This is what you're talking about?
Yep.
And processing payouts for the first month of the Sparkloop HQ partner program right now, and the results are brain exploding emoji. This is the payout for a newsletter with 15K subs. We're talking rent plus groceries, annual family. Cool little piece of copy. Okay, so here we go. $3,600 over the course of, I guess, lifetime, but the referral program is only 2 months old, maybe.
Yeah. 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 Look at that. That's September 23rd is the first date on this chart. So he's done 600 referrals, $3,600. $6 a pop, which is right. Am I doing my math right there? Roughly $6, $5 to $6 a pop. So for people with small newsletters, and if you may already be running Sparkloop, take a look at the partner program. There's something there. Again, all these work better. And this is the one thing I'll say to caveat all this. These ad networks are cool, but we had a rule at The Hustle, which is that when it comes to ad performance, everybody wins when your audience comes first. And what that means is that what we will wait to see from all these ad networks is, are they able to do the ads in such a way where they can deliver ads that each newsletter's audience actually cares about? Because as soon as they take that out of the equation, if that goes out of the equation, conversion rates will all go down. Open rates will go down. Everybody starts to lose. So these are great to the extent that they are directly in line with what your audience wants to hear. Outside of that, I would be a little bit hesitant, but definitely check them out. It's a cool opportunity for people.
Very cool. Great show. This went in a total different direction. I have a whole bunch of stuff in my notebook that I planned on bringing up, and it's got nothing to do with anything that we talked about.
So that seems to be how it goes every week. Yeah, this was fun, man. Yeah. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being, you know, we talked about what it's been like the last year or so. Thanks for being a part of that. It's been pretty cool so far. We got big plans coming up. Lots of fun interviews. Let me plug these interviews now so people can get excited. I got two on the books coming up. One is Jordan DiPietro. He worked for 12 or 15 years helping grow Motley Fool into an enormous company. Now he leads our team over at HubSpot Media. Super interesting guy. Knows a ton about audience building and the business behind content. So he and I are sitting down to chat in a couple of weeks. We'll have that coming up. And then I'm also talking with Chris Orzechowski, who is an email specialist. He helps like e-com companies boost sales through their newsletters. He and I have talked before. He's a member of Trends, super cool guy. But the reason we're getting back together, in addition to kind of just catch up on what he's seeing in the news, in the email space, is that he's been sending a paper newsletter and apparently it's doing great. So I want to talk to him about direct mail, all the opportunities that are there right now. That one's going to be really, really cool. And Chris is a great dude too. So people, keep your ears open, keep your eyes open. We got some cool stuff coming for you.
Yeah, I got two as well. I got Bored Elon coming on the show.
Oh, yeah.
That is next week, I think. I'm not totally sure. We're going to talk, for anybody that doesn't know Bored Elon, he's an anonymous Twitter account. But I don't know if this kind of software is easy to get. He does video, Zoom videos, and he created this like facial type thing where he's just a green set of lines with a face with actual like expressions and laughter and smiles. He's really cool. I'm going to talk to him about his crypto company because he's one of the few examples I've seen of people actually using Web3 and creating a product that is working. So I'm interested because he's a content marketer. He uses his Twitter handle. He's got 1.2 million followers. He uses his brand, I think, for all I know, it could be a woman. But he uses his brand to promote his product, and I want to hear about that. And then we talked about Ben Wilson a few times on the show. I am so freaking pumped to talk to him. I don't even know if I'm going to talk about podcasts or media. I might just talk to him about Napoleon, and maybe we'll talk about Genghis Khan, and maybe we'll just go deep into the world.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah. Cool. So we got some great stuff coming up. Hope everybody enjoyed the show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.